Running your own business can feel isolating, but you don't have to figure it all out alone. Join a free guest session inside the Smashing the Plateau community to get fresh ideas and real solutions to your biggest business challenge. Spots are limited. Reserve yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.
One thing I realize is people want to see what they're going to get. And the days of just saying, I can do this, are pretty much gone.
Today's guest, Michael Himmelfarb, explores how to blend AI with human judgment to create trust, clarity, and momentum. We'll unpack a fresh way to frame pricing and packaging that spotlights value, cuts through noise, and makes decisions simpler in uncertain times. Michael also surfaces grounded tactics for earning attention, nurturing relationships, and iterating quickly, turning curiosity into action without overcomplicating the process. If you're seeking a concise, energizing lens on what to do next, this conversation points the way. Now let's welcome Michael Himmelfarb. Michael is founder of HG Partners, a consulting firm that advises growing tech companies on monetization and go-to-market. Michael developed a unique consulting model that combines AI advantages with human superpowers of creativity, empathy, and experience to deliver high-impact results in as little as 48 hours. Former GM of a $200 million Nielsen business and five-time tech CXO, he is passionate about teaching consultants how to leverage AI without losing the human trust advantage. His blog, Reframing Forward, explores the future of AI-enhanced business and work. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
Let's start off by talking a little bit about your own career journey. What brought you to where you are today?
Well, I've had a very interesting journey. I actually started out of college in investment banking, quickly decided it wasn't for me. And then after going to business school, I went into essentially marketing and product marketing. And that's my pedigree. I'm classically trained in CPG. I then went into tech product marketing, did that for a number of years. Then was at Nielsen, so data and analytics and technology. Ran a couple of business units there. Ended up running the global business unit you just mentioned. And about 10 years ago, I just decided I couldn't take corporate life anymore. It was just killing me. And so I left. And I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do. But luckily for me, there's a lot of smaller companies that are trying to essentially disrupt Nielsen. And so there's a lot of work for me based on my experience and background, just helping them get started. And so I eventually developed a practice around that, focused on B2B tech and data companies, mostly early stage. So seed stage through, you know, a couple million dollars. And did that for about 8 years. And then last year, you know, I started seeing that the market was changing dramatically for a number of reasons. Customers just, where the business was really easy, all of a sudden customers were not willing to just, they didn't want to hire a full-time or even a fractional person. They had very specific problems. There were point issues that their hair was on fire on and they had to solve. And they didn't have as much money, right? And they also, just because of the market, they're really risk averse. And it just seemed like there was a lot of things out there that were causing challenges to the business, whether it was the politics, the tariffs, AI itself. And so I took a step back probably about a year ago and reevaluated what I wanted to do. And I realized that being a broad spectrum marketer really was not the way I wanted to go for a couple of reasons. First of all, I felt like I was just competing against the other 25,000 CMOs out there. And I was having trouble articulating what my differentiator was. And as I mentioned, customers really wanted a very specific solution and they wanted it quick and they wanted it cheap. And then honestly, the other part of it was I know myself and I realized I frankly didn't enjoy doing all the execution work. You know, I really enjoy the strategy, the innovation, the problem solving. And so I wanted to figure out a model that would work for me that I would enjoy. But also I could add a lot of value to my clients. And so I came up with this method, which we can talk more about. I started focusing in on pricing in product packaging, which isn't my wheelhouse anyway as part of marketing and product marketing. But it was a particular pain point that a lot of customers were telling me about. They didn't understand it. They didn't know how to attack it. They weren't confident in what they were doing. And so I really started drilling down into that and positioning myself against that in particular. And then I got into what I'm doing now. And this was probably about 3 months ago. I tried to figure out how I could leverage AI better. And in particular, I wanted to see if I could create a product that clients couldn't do themselves with AI. It was around a price point of around $5,000. I could do it with just a company's URL, and I could deliver in 48 hours. So that was my goal using AI. And that's what I worked on. It took me a ton of time for probably about a month. You know, I created a bunch of models that I programmed into Claude is the engine I happen to use, and design the output, figure out what I would deliver, figure out what the expansion strategy would be, and, you know, just created it. And I've been running it for probably about 3 or 4 weeks and have an actually tremendous response. Really excited about it. I've probably run about 10 of them so far. So people are, the uptake is very, very high, especially for investors, because they feel like it's a black box. It's an area where they could grow the company, but they just don't understand it that well. And the method I have is really value-based. And so it really points to where they can, where the opportunity to grow is, and gives them an action plan for actually achieving that. So yeah, that's my background leading up to this. And
yeah. So how do you describe your offer, Michael?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think. I'll say in 1 sentence. I help companies optimize their revenue by improving their pricing strategy. And the foundation of it is value-based pricing. And I can do it inexpensively, efficiently, and with very little effort on their end. I focus on B2B tech and data companies between $1 and $25 million.
And I have a few different questions. One is, given the chaos and the complexity and the risk aversion that's going on in the market today, how do you get the attention of the decision maker to actually engage with you and like the beginning stages of what will end up in a pitch?
Well, so that's an interesting question. One thing I realized is people want to see what they're going to get. And the days of just saying, I can do this, are pretty much gone. And so I actually have a version that I can run without even talking to them. Again, all I need is their URL. I had one investor client. I literally had a 30-second conversation with him. He gave me maybe two other data points. And I could run a really simple analysis, give them the executives. Actually, I would run the whole analysis and just give them the executive summary so they can see what's coming. And what I really focused on was the value. So I can predict how much upside they have if they were to fix their pricing. So what is the gap they're leaving on the table? And usually it's in the 20 to 30% range. So it's significant. And especially if the next step is to spend $5,000 or $10,000, the ROI on a project is just great. And it's also at a price point where they're not going to think twice. So I really realized that I gotta show them what I can do, add some value right off the bat, and then give them something that is, it's easy to buy. They don't need to run it up the flagpole. They don't need to ask their investors. It's something they could just decide on the spot. So that's been my go-to-market strategy.
Very clever. How did you feel about investing so much time developing the model without any customers?
Well, I think one of my big advantages is I just love this stuff. I really love innovation. I wanted something that was, you know, stimulating. And honestly, I had a great time doing it, even though I wasn't making as much money as I wanted to. I just enjoyed it. And I kind of thought of it as, you know, the 80-20 rule. Well, I sort of think of it as the 20-80 rule. And that is, most of the companies I talked to, I just had this feeling they were thinking, you know, should I spend a lot of money on this high price consultant, or should I just spend $20 in ChatGPT and get myself 80% of the way there? And so what I really wanted to do is figure out, what is that other 20%? That's going to add a ton of value. And that's really where I focused. And so, you know, initially I thought, well, you know, maybe I could just have a website that someone puts their URL in and it spits all the stuff out, right? And I realized that what people really want is they want someone that they can talk to and that they trust, right? Like people just don't trust AI for really important decisions. And 9 times out of 10, the first conversation I have with them is, okay, so how'd you do that? Where'd this number come from? What was your methodology? And what takes me the most time right now is just going through some of the results that the engine generates and making sure it's right and iterating on it. And every client's different, right? So I built this for a B2B model where there's a single customer, for example. And then last week I was talking to a client that has a marketplace. So they have customers and they have two different sets of customers. So my model is a great framework because the basic tenets of value-based pricing apply, but I had to modify it. I mean, I had to know enough to be able to create something that was really specific for them. And so I think that combination of them being able to trust me, knowing that I put the time and effort into it, and I just enjoy it. And I think it's really interesting. That's really what the differentiator has been.
Yeah. You mentioned something that I think sounds to me like perhaps the major pain point, which is that people don't trust AI for important decisions.
Yep. What I always tell people is there's a good reason for that. If you think of what the number one source of data for ChatGPT is, it's Reddit. So enough said, it's just basically user-generated content. And it makes mistakes all the time. There was a classic example where I had given it a very specific formula, you know, add these two columns and multiply by 10. And it came back with the numbers and they were wildly off. It was obvious that they were way too high. And so I said, you can check the math, what happened here? And said, oh, I accidentally multiplied by 100, not 10. So, you know, it just makes mistakes. And if you don't have the experience that we do and have been around the block, you're never going to notice. And that's, I think, the big advantage we have is that we just have this experience that we can call on. So yeah, that I think is the big learning for me.
Right. So, you know, it sounds like actually a really important bit of learning. And based on what you've experienced, what would you advise other experienced consultants who are struggling to connect with lead sources, struggling to convert initial conversations into paid business because of what's going on in our world today?
Well, I think the interesting thing about the work I do, I have mentioned it's a value-based pricing model. And I think that it applies for us as consultants as well, is like, how are we adding value? And if you think about that, there could be a number of different ways. You could be replacing work, you could be growing the revenue, reducing the risk of lawsuit or whatever it happens to be. And so that's sort of the framework I would start with. Honestly, I do most of my marketing either through referrals, but I've also started investing in LinkedIn marketing. And I do that in a way and I like doing this, it's just giving back, right? So I found one technique that works especially well is you find the people that you're interested in connecting with and you comment on their posts, like a really thoughtful comment, not just a thumbs up or whatever. And the great thing is people always read the responses to their posts, right? So mm-hmm. You're always going to get an audience with somebody. And I had done, there's this guy, a PE guy who writes all the time. He must have like 100,000 followers because he gets a ton of traffic. And he wrote an article that I was really interested in. I'd actually been thinking about it all weekend anyway. And so I wrote this comment on it. And first of all, I got like 30,000 views just on my comment, which is great for me. And then I got 20 likes and I got a number of comments. There's a whole engagement behind it. And then I just reached out to those people. And my whole theory is, like I said, with this new business, like I give some people something that they find valuable to get the conversation going and cut through the clutter that way.
Yeah. And this is actually a great segue into something else I wanted to talk to you about, which is community and collaboration, right? So you're using, you know, this LinkedIn example mm-hmm. is a way that you're connecting with people around ideas. And I'm wondering, like in your own experience, how has community collaboration and peer connection played a role in your own growth?
Oh gosh, it's huge, especially as an independent consultant. I've made some friends along the way that are especially specialists in other areas that think like me. So head of sales or head of customer success or former CEOs. And I just learn a lot from them. Like, I think the most important thing is just to listen and absorb and get coaching and ask for help. I mean, there's a sales guy. I literally just met him probably 6 months ago. And now we're good friends and we think about how we can collaborate all the time. But I think you just have to approach it as, how am I going to help this other person? The funny thing is, so I went to college a long time ago, but the one thing that sticks with me is during graduation, the dean of the school said, the best way to succeed is to help others succeed. And I think about that all the time. And I think it's just a great mantra to use, especially if you're in our position, because you just have a wealth of experience that you can share with people. And I like doing that. So that's really what I've leaned into a lot over the past year or so.
Yeah. So along those lines, when you have this mindset of helping others, how do you decide where to invest your time in helping others? And where do you draw the line between helping, where essentially you're volunteering your time versus what you actually get paid to do?
Yeah, that's a very difficult question. So I think that you have to look at everything in somewhat of a transactional basis. And there's no reason to feel badly about sharing any upside that you deliver to somebody else. Right. So when I first started out with this last piece, I was way over delivering and I knew I was, but I got enough feedback that now I know what I can deliver that's going to give value, but also going to allow me to share in the upside that I deliver later on. And it's a tough balance, but I just think that through trial and error, you can get there. But again, I think part of it is just being confident to know that you are adding value. You're making someone else's job or life or company better. And there's no reason why you shouldn't share in that. You know, I look at a lot of the clients I have in the tech space, the average amount that they capture when they deliver value is around 20%. So it's just a general assumption. Hey, I deliver $100,000 of value for you. I want $20,000. And you can look, there's tons of research around this too. So I think if you go in that mindset, it just makes it a little bit easier to make the ask.
How hard do you find it is to get people to pay attention in today's noisy world?
It's not easy. And I would say my advice is to do your own work. You know, I read this really interesting study published by Anthropic, which one's Claude, about a month ago. And they sliced and diced AI usage a number of different ways. And one of the most interesting charts for me was they looked at how people were using AI for automation versus augmentation. And 90% of the usage is automation. So there's probably no one listening to this podcast that doesn't have ChatGPT do some writing for it, right? That I would consider automation, because you could probably do it yourself. But the augmentation is thinking, okay, I have these skills that AI doesn't have. How am I going to combine the two so I have something that's better than the parts? And I use AI to check my work, but I always write my own stuff because I know it's more authentic. It stands out. If I have a typo, whatever, you know, people then know it's actually me. And so I think it's just important to do that. And honestly, if I tell people I'm going to give them something for free, it's going to show them 20% increase in sales, they're going to listen, right? So you just need to figure out what you can offer them and be able to quantify the value and make it super easy for them. Yeah. And those are, I think, would be the big three that I'd look at doing.
Yeah. Now, going back to your current offer, it sounds like the offer is primarily a transactional sale.
Yeah. So I don't know where it's going to end up, to be honest. So right now it's a project, and I do have a pricing sheet, which has the $10,000 version and the ongoing advisory. So I'm thinking about that. Depending on where this goes, I could either have like a deliverable that's super easy to deliver and recurring. You know, I have some ideas on how I could do what I'm doing, but on a recurring basis. So there could be the volume play. The other one could be, it could be a loss leader for consultant, right? You know, I just had a client who said they needed pricing help, but what they really needed was help figuring out how to sell their pricing. So it was more of a sales enablement challenge than it was actually the pricing. And then the third way it could go is, as I really thought about this, I'm proving it out with pricing, but there's no reason this couldn't work for almost any other function out there, right? So I sort of have in the back of my mind, maybe there's essentially a collective or marketplace of point solutions. We have people like us, we each have our specialty and we have this engine and it does X and, kind of put it all together. So that could be the third way. And I'm talking, like I mentioned, that's the sales friend of mine. I'm talking to some other people about that as well. So I'm just trying to be flexible and see what happens.
Right, right. No, I like your approach. It's interesting how you've kind of narrowed a very specific niche problem and how you're looking at ways to leverage this that could be very expansive in terms of the solutions you could provide to clients, your own business model and how that may play out, and potentially some other kinds of offers that would be related to what this initial offer is.
Yeah. I think one thing that's helped me is I grew up on the product side, so I'm very familiar with agile development and, short mm-hmm. sprints, have very, very targeted goals for limited times. And so I think, especially when working with the AI, you need this iterative approach. I always tell people, if you're using AI, don't come up with a huge prompt. Probably your most valuable question is, here's what I'm thinking of doing and how I'm thinking of doing it. What do you think? And just have a dialogue with it. To me, that's the most effective in thinking about, okay, you get the results and I'm going to analyze them. Then I'm going to figure out how to improve that. And you just kind of go back and forth. And it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of mental energy, but I think the results are just so much better in the end.
Yeah, no, I agree. Michael, is there a resource mindset or next step that you wish you'd had earlier in your career?
Sure. Yeah. I think the biggest one is around relationships and the need to invest in them. It's really interesting. I get a lot of calls from college kids looking for advice, to reach out to me cold or, kids of friends. And probably 99% of the time, they never even follow up. So I'll have a conversation. I've even gotten kids jobs and they never tell me. I just happen to hear through their parents. And I think the thing you learn over time is you got to invest in these relationships and you can't just call somebody when you need something. And, you give and you get back. You hope you get back at some point in the future. So I think that's a big one. I also a big proponent of transparency. So just being open and sharing and honest and authentic, I think is also really goes a long way.
Yeah, which you have demonstrated during this conversation, by the way.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate your willingness to just be who you are. Makes for a much more compelling conversation.
Oh, great. I'd be happy to talk to any of your members. Get on the phone, tell them what I'm doing, and help them, give them a couple ideas on how they might be able to adjust their business as well, if that would be helpful.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And with that in mind, if someone listening to this wants to go deeper mm-hmm. with anything we've discussed today or that you've shared, where's the best place for them to go to access any resources or get in touch with you?
Yeah, I would say LinkedIn is a good summary of my personal profile. I have a website, hg-partners.com. Needs updating, but you can still check it out and you can see my background. And then, as you mentioned, I have a new blog on Substack called Reframing Forward. And here's the really interesting thing is that I had a blog about pricing. It's got met with a lot of yawns, but I started posting about these types of things, like how is AI transforming the future of work and how are people going to succeed in that world? The response has been off the charts. It's like really interesting to people. And so if you go to that blog, you'll see how I lay out this theory that I'm sharing here. And then I have a whole bunch of ideas on how to, continue that. So I think it's interesting and it might be helpful for people to take a look at that as well.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I've checked it out. So
okay.
Yeah, I encourage people to take a look at it. Michael, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau and share your insights. My guest today has been the president of HD Partners, Michael Himmelfarb. Thank you, Michael, for joining us.
Thanks, David. I really appreciate it.
Running your own business can feel isolating. That's why we created Smash Through Your Business Roadblocks, a live interactive session where experienced professionals bring real challenges and work through them together using the Smash framework. It's your chance to experience the Smashing the Plateau community, a space where corporate refugees support one another to keep moving forward. You'll leave with fresh momentum, clarity, and maybe even a few new allies in your corner. Guest spots are limited, so grab yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.